Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Mark, the CEO of Rift. In recent podcast episodes, we talked about the building sector and the need to lower emissions. Some areas where we need to take action are harder to identify, such as the industrial heat space. This is exactly where Rift is active and has developed a groundbreaking tech to decarbonize that sector. More in just a second. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
Let's start with you introducing yourself. Who are you as a person?
I'm Mark Vraag, CEO and co-founder of Rift. I have a background in chemical engineering, business and economics. So my interest was really from start one of technical but also economical, to really make an impact. And actually, one aspect of me is I love working in teams. And then working with a team to beat your contestant. Like, imagine yourself like being on a soccer field, playing soccer with your teammates, and then beating that team, which is better than you, and drinking a beer afterwards. That feeling is amazing, and that is what I strive for, and that is what we do within the climate space as well. Yeah,
that sounds like a great motivation. And I guess running a startup is also very much that same spirit, right? Fighting against the, or sort of being perceived as the underdog at least, and then fighting against the status quo, the teams that might be bigger, better than you, having more resources, but then ultimately still pulling through and, winning the game. It's a good analogy.
Yeah, it is a great analogy, and it stays the team as well, really focused.
Yeah.
Defining the game.
So I mentioned Rift in the intro, so maybe let's start off our conversation about the company with the question, what does Rift actually stand for?
Yeah, so we stand for, our mission is to decarbonizing industrial heat, and this is critical for decarbonizing our total society, because industrial heat is responsible for 20% of all greenhouse gases. And while industrial heat is not commonly known, it is actually the basis of the products that are produced. Without industrial heat, there is no paper, there is no pulp, there is no food, there are no beverages, there are no chemicals which we use on our products, there are no metals, and industrial heat is critical to it, and it cannot be skipped. At this moment in time, it is actually created by combusting fossil fuels that generates a lot of carbon dioxide, and as a result, 20% of the global carbon dioxide emissions. And Rift is really there to cut that down towards zero. And we do this with our unique technology, the iron fuel technology.
Right. Tell me more about that. How does that work in practice?
Yeah, before maybe diving directly in the technology, let's focus first on the problem itself. If you are okay.
Yeah, sure. Let's go there.
We understand the background really good. So if we are looking to industrial heat, there are great options already available. So we have electrification in the form of e-boilers, electrical heat storage, or heat pumps. They are great. Or you have hydrogen kind of boiler systems. These are also great. But both options can often not be used, because to implement a technology to change fossil fuels towards a sustainable technology, it needs to be practical, implementable, and it needs to be cheaper, because otherwise those companies will be hurt in their P&L.
Yeah.
Therefore, a lot of decarbonization options are not implemented actually around the globe, and industrial heat is lagging behind.
Right, because in nature, what you're saying is they're either too expensive in order to make that switch, or even when they're price competitive, they're just not easy, practical to implement.
True, true. So an example of practical implementation is, for example, if you want electrification, you require a grid connection. But there are grid problems. Or if you require hydrogen, you need a grid connection pipeline as well of hydrogen next in front of your door. Otherwise, you cannot use it. Those simple but things are not there often. And actually, as a result, a large part of the industry cannot decarbonize before 2030. And even in 2050, this is still a problem. So there is room left for other technologies which enables practical implementation are cheaper than fossil fuels and therefore can be implemented. And that's exactly the space that we are in with our technology. So we can be used on locations where other technologies cannot be used. And we can be cheaper than fossil fuels.
Right, because especially on the locations, I guess it's just to go there once more. I would assume as you're tackling the industrial heat space, that's often very established companies that have been using industrial heat for many years, sort of established manufacturing production sites. And therefore, it's a lot harder to draw the grid connection for an improved electricity grid or even hydrogen grid there compared to sort of building, you know, a plant somewhere from scratch where you could factor that into the planning process. Whereas, you know, with the established production processes, I guess that you also have the downtime then to make switches and so on. I guess that's just a whole lot more complex. So you need solutions that are easy and fast to implement.
Yeah, completely right. And they cannot change their location because you cannot take a factory and place it somewhere else. If the factory is there, then the fuel needs to be.
Right. Okay, understood the problem and you have a solution. So tell me, how does the iron fuel technology work?
We have a completely new technology and that is actually really similar to the current technologies. So at the industrial heat space, fossil fuels are normally burned in the boiler system and therefore heat is generated.
Right.
Like, for example, you do in your own house. And we do this as well, but then with iron as a fuel. So we place an iron fuel boiler system at their facility where iron as a fuel comes in. And the iron fuel, I have it here in front of me, is like iron particles as big as sand. And if you combine that with air and just a spark, a big flame is created of 2000 Celsius degrees that radiates a lot of heat. And this heat can be used to generate steam, hot air, or hot water, which the industry uses. And as there is no carbon in the fuel itself, it doesn't emit any carbon dioxide.
Right, got you. Because that's the real problem, right? If you burn natural gas or oil or coal, those are all carbon-based fuels. So in the process of burning those fuels, you emit the carbon dioxide. And as you're saying, iron-based fuels, they don't have any carbon, so there are no carbon emissions.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. The only product that we create is rust, because you need to oxidize something, because otherwise no heat will be generated. And the iron oxide is actually in powder form as well. And this is captured and reused to produce iron fuel again using a hydrogen source. So how it works then is the captured rust is transported by trucks and ships towards a hydrogen source where it is actually converted into iron fuel again, and the iron fuel is transported again towards the boiler facility.
And so it's actually a fuel that you can use over and over again, right? Because it's a circular approach.
It is a circular approach. Actually, you can compare it with a battery or an energy storage system, which is transportable. Each powder and a little bit of powder is actually a battery itself. So we have the iron fuel, which is the charged battery, and the iron oxide, which is the empty battery. And
you are the decharged battery.
B2B.
That's super cool. And how is the industry reacting to that? Because that's like, for me, this is a total game changer to have a fuel. Because, or let me take one step back. We just talked about sort of the traditional fuel sources that we have, right? Coal, oil, gas. You burn them, they're gone, and all you're left with is, well, our carbon emissions and the heat that you actually want to have. Now, in your case, you still get the heat in all various forms, whether it's steam, hot water, whatever it might be. But you have a fuel that can actually is ultimately a resource again, because if you add the hydrogen again, it can be reused. So just the battery example that you have. So that must be quite a game changer for the industry. So then back to my question, what does the industry say? How are they reacting?
So the first time that you tell this to anybody, they are shocked, because it's completely out of the things that we understand already today.
Yeah, I can imagine. I have the same reaction.
Yeah. It's like going back in time towards the first persons talking about electricity, why you cannot see it. So luckily, you can see the fuel, so we can explain it better. And I know really the first time that I was, I heard about it, I said, no, this is not, this cannot be true. I was actually quite skeptical. But then I started reading about it and said like, okay, this is a game changer if this is all true. And this is also a direct reaction of the industry often. So first they react like, huh? What are you talking about? And then we start explaining it, showing the numbers, showing a proof. And I say, okay, then I'm really interested. And that resulted as well in $2 billion of LOIs from customers. So there is real customer traction on that area and there is real interest.
Great. I mean, that's amazing to hear. Maybe shine a bit more light on, first, how did you find out about iron fuel? Like, what was the process to get to identify iron as a fuel? Has that been around for quite some time, or is that something completely novel?
The metals of burning is actually quite broadly known. Right. Think about the fireworks. Fireworks works exactly at the same principle that we do. So it has been there already before fossil fuels. And also this has been developed in the 1800s, in the 1920s and 1970s a little bit. But then fossil fuels became dominant and there was no room for it and no need for it. So why investing in a new technology development if you have a good alternative being fossil fuel at that moment in time? And in 2015, a professor in Canada picked up the periodic table again and starting drawing which elements can we burn in a sustainable manner. And that was actually the start. He reported it again in a paper. And based on this paper, a student team, together with professors in Eindhoven, Technical University in Eindhoven, started doing some tests, really small, 2-3 people. Mm-hmm. And that grow and that grow and that grow. And after 2 years, I personally joined the student team. And from that perspective, we started our spin-off.
Right. I mean, that's amazing to see, right? Like also what you mentioned before about the football team, that it needs that approach of working together, being on a field. In this case, even sort of research that was done in one place and then published, picked up by someone else, started out small against sort of a very established industry. Because if you want to be bold, you could even say, look, what you're doing is replacing fossil fuels here. So you're up against the largest guys that are out there with your approach, and you do it in a clean, scalable, and reusable manner. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, it is really exciting. Yeah, it is. And it's great work on it within team and also with all the partners and everything like that who's involved. It's amazing to see what progress you can make with a team which really wants together. That is incredible. That is something that's indescribable. Yeah.
You mentioned the LOIs before. So shine a bit of light on how far have you come as the company? You just described the journey of, you know, spinning out the company, you joining. So what's the journey been like for you as a company?
For the journey itself is a roller coaster, but I think that every year.
I guess that's every start of journey, right?
Yeah. But at this moment in time, we have completed our industrial pilots. Those are on a 1 megawatt scale in real industrial application. And right. You have to imagine systems which are 20 meters high, 6 by 6, really on an industrial scale with reactors the size of a human body. So it is really like the standard of the industry, and we are just at dawn of first commercial implementation. So we are now working towards our first commercial systems, called in the industry the FOAX.
Well known also on this podcast.
Yeah, and the difficult part as well, one of the most difficult parts. Yeah, that is where we are standing. And at this moment in time, we are the world leader in this field. So actually, yeah, we are the world leader in this black swan.
Right. Yeah. And I guess, as I said before, you know, this must be something that the industry, I guess, in first conversations almost can't believe, because it's almost too good to be true. So exciting to see that, that you're making so good progress, and that you're hopefully very soon are at commercial serial production.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's great.
Speaking about the industry and sort of almost being too good to be true, what were some of the challenges that you had to overcome, especially also, as you mentioned, folks are first of its kind? What are some of the challenges, I guess, also in the current funding climate and, you know, scaling up a technology from, well, ultimately a research paper to a viable tech business that is working in industrial large-scale applications? So what's that journey been like, and what were the challenges that you had to overcome there?
Yeah, those are a lot of questions in one.
Sorry.
So I'm thinking how to react best on it. But I think the challenge is for every startup is the same, is you have too little money, you have too little time, and you have actually a team and partners which is not yet completely devolved with the competences that you have to have. And that combination of ingredients makes your challenges of every day, whether it is your market focus, whether it is your technology development, right, or whatever. And if I pinpoint a couple of challenges, is actually, as Rift, we are developing the iron fuel boilers and production systems in-house with our partners. So you are developing new kinds of technologies, and you have all kinds of technology areas where you need to make choices. Every time it is making choices, and you make choices sometimes on 50% of the information.
Right.
But I think the big challenge of every startup is your focus, and really dedicating your focus where your first market will be. So doing really a good market analysis, based on that, designing your technologies on the requirements that market has. And that is sometimes a challenge. Yeah. And everything.
I can imagine. How do you navigate that? And what would your advice be to others listening to the podcast, for example, and, you know, being in a maybe a similar space of looking at research that's out there, playing with the idea to spin out a company, and probably then it might be a first of its kind. So what are some of the learnings, or what are some of the things that you would do differently in hindsight?
So actually, when in the industrial heat atmosphere, in the industrial heat market, we are luckily that it isn't really a rational market. So there is, are you practical? Are you able to practical implement? And are you cheaper? This is great that this is the case, because if it is a kind of rational market, you can model it. You can really study the market and see what your focus is, instead of markets that are more like subjective or something like that. So that is that's beautiful. And that is really that we learned as well. Because if you change one thing in your requirements, you have often to change your full technology and your supply chain perspective and the full business strategy. And that takes a while and it costs a lot of money. So really to do the analytics good which market to pinpoint based on regionals, where is your sweet spot, and then going back towards how do we target that first market and being implemented in this market. That is actually because then the technology, the supply chain and everything, the strategy is actually mean to reach that point. And if everybody knows which points to reach, then you create focus, which results in just like using less money, ensuring that we reach it in less time, and attracting the right competent people within it. So then you are actually skipping those three challenges of a startup.
It's interesting because I guess when you describe this, it sounded to me like absolute focus is the right answer there, to say, look, we know exactly where we're going, we're doing this with a razor sharp focus on industry, this is the product, you know, this is the timeline, everything is sort of focused towards that point. And then afterwards, we can go broad again, because once we have market acceptance and once we have the first real cases out there, obviously everything is going to be easy, right? Because then revenue is going to come in and we're less dependent on the external financing and so on and so on. So that will, that just makes your life ultimately a lot easier to, and as you said, obviously that focus has the positive side effect of, well, you're going to use less money, you're going to make less costly mistakes or take turns in order to get there, because you know where you're going. So you're focused on taking the most direct way there and not just taking one or two detours.
Yeah. And the beautiful part is, if you have that, in addition, you have your challenger, the soccer team in front of you. You have those really clear. And then the full team can go for it. So everybody knows when we beat that team, then it is time to drink and beer or wine or feast together as well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That very good to stay in that picture. Now, let's say you're going to play the big team very soon. In 3 to 5 years from now, what's Rift going to look like? What's the impact that you're going to make? What are your goals? Where are you going?
Yeah, so our ultimate goal is to reduce 1 gigaton of carbon dioxide per year in 2050. And this is huge. This is big. So that is our ultimate goal. And to imagine that goal, a coal-fired power plant is normally 1 gigawatt. And we have to install around the world and more than 800 of those, which do iron fuel, to ensure that number to be there. From, if we look closer towards where we are now, is at this moment in time, we are executing, testing our industrial pilots. Looks really good. We do durability testing on those industrial pilots for the next years and start commercial implementation in 2026, 2027 for the first systems. In 2030, we expect to have multiple systems in the field already, generating significant amounts of revenue. And from that point onwards, scaling up. Scaling up towards that 1 gigaton, so that we can really make this impact happening on locations where other technologies are not viable yet.
Right. Just on that, because that's a question that I didn't ask before. I want to go back to that real quick. I mean, you're based in the Netherlands right now. What is your view on the geographic split up or the geographic scale up? Will it be in Europe first and then worldwide afterwards? Or how do you look at that? Because I assume that, well, industrial heat is used globally, so, you know, the world is yours. But again, look, going back to focus and where you're going first, I would assume you have a good answer to that as well.
Yeah. So, as I said, industrial heat is a kind of regional market where pricing is really important. Mm-hmm. So you want to be in those locations where the price point of industrial heat is actually the highest, because then you can be competitive with fossil fuel faster and be faster implemented, right, on bigger scale. And that is actually the European Union in that aspect is really good due to the fact that they have EU ETS taxes on big industrial plants. And therefore, they got carbon dioxide penalties on fossil fuels, which is actually regulated around Europe for the same. So the first focus is indeed European Union. And if we then look at our birthplace in the Netherlands, that is actually perfect because the Netherlands is so small. You can just drive through the Netherlands in 1.5 hour, but it is the most dense of hydrogen in actually in the world, and it is the most dense in the world of industrial heat. So actually the two ingredients that we require and the highest price points comes together in the Netherlands. So there we see by accident, it's really fit to implement our technology first, then scale it out towards European Union as those price points are already set. If those price points are matched as well on other geographical locations, we will go there, of course, as well to decarbonize. But it needs to be rational. Right. Because otherwise, it is just a dream.
Yeah. And I guess time is playing in your favor in that sense that, you know, in the future, the price for traditional industrial heat will, or conventional industrial heat will, most likely increase. So from that point of view, and you know, with additional CO2 prices coming on board and so on, the business case will more and more look in your favor. So for you, I guess it's really about getting the first commercial applications out there, the first real cases out there, and then continue to scale wherever the price points are right.
Yeah, completely right. And actually, day by day, it improves our situation and it becomes better and better. So that is the beautiful part. Today, we are actually on the hardest part. So if we manage this, then scale up, then actually the expectation is that it really can scale and really that we can decarbonize the industries on locations where others can't. Yeah.
Nice. And I guess at the same time, we don't have the time as a society. So I think, you know, as you said, it gets better and better day by day for you as a business. And at the same time, we want to make the impact as quickly as possible to contribute to your missions. I guess from that sense, you know, the pressure is still on. So it's not just a game of, you know, waiting and sitting it out, but rather being proactive in rational markets to deliver the tech.
Yeah. Completely right. And it is just like, that is the thing that we are really working hard with everybody who is pushing with us, partner sites as well, is really to make that extra step. That extra step is worth gold. Yeah.
Yeah. And then on the personal note, to close us off, what is it that keeps you going? Because you know, you mentioned the roller coaster ride of being in a startup and the sort of journey from the paper to the company and now to scaling a tech. That's a whole lot of hard work, right? And to stay one last time in the football analogy, you could say there are more enjoyable things than always being on the underdogs team to play against the big guys, because you know, if you're a good player, you could also move to another potentially more promising team in the sense that things might get easier for you. You might not, you know, have the same playing time and you might not have the same ability to deliver impact. So personally for you, what is it that keeps you going and what is it that made you choose Rift in the first place?
Maybe if I then a combination of three things. So I really love to make an impact, whether it is towards a person or something like that, or towards a society, to make an impact. The second one is I'm quite competitive. So I'm always looking forward and I really want to push. I love pushing. I love the pain sometimes. And the third one is I love to work with passionate people and to really, and you see that all around you. So that actually those three ingredients make sure that every day I stand up with an yes, we are going there again. or we are trying there again. And if it hurts, it hurts, but we will reach that point.
Yeah, I think that's a really good combination of three things that are needed in order to both fight the climate crisis, but also scale up a climate tech company, which I guess is ultimately, in your case, the same thing, scaling up the climate tech company to fight the climate crisis. I really think that you got something special going on there. And again, I'm still mind blown of the fact that, you know, the powder, the fuel that you showed earlier that our listeners can't see, but I was able to see. It feels like such a almost logic step. It's like it's such an easy thing to replace, but it's such an impactful solution. So that being said, all the best for the future endeavors, and you know, let's keep in touch. Speak again in 3 to 5 years and then see how far you've come on your journey.
Thank you, and I hope we will overdeliver.
Yeah, me too. I think that's in everyone's interest.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Mark.
All right.